both campaigns will be working really hard, but I think you'll won't see a lot of Vermonter interest in them until probably after the legislative session ends.
That's meant to basically shield information that's in there from public disclosure on information that would be used to evaluate law enforcement officers.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and on this episode, politics is heating up in the state of Vermont. But first, New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, a Republican from the 21st District, is co-sponsoring legislation that would direct the Government Accountability Office to assess how individuals on pretrial release are monitored at the federal, state, and local levels. Reforms that went into effect in New York on January 1st eliminated cash bails for most nonviolent felonies and misdemeanors. Many Republicans and some Democrats, as well as law enforcement officials, are now calling for tweaks to those reforms. Stefanik says the federal legislation, which is in a House subcommittee, would ensure communities are not at risk. Well, now that Vermont Lieutenant Governor David Zuckerman is officially running for governor, that decision is setting off a series of other political announcements. WAMC's North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley has more.
The political leadership in Montpelier is poised for change at the end of 2020. On Monday, Progressive Democrat Lieutenant Governor David Zuckerman announced he's running for the state's top job. Republican Phil Scott is in his second term.
I will run in the Democratic primary. I will seek to write in on the progressive ballot, and I will run under both party names when I win those primaries in order to take on Governor Scott.
Last July, former State Education Secretary Rebecca Holcomb began her campaign for governor. Monday, she released a list of 15 prominent state Democrats endorsing her campaign. She says she's looking forward to a primary.
I'm really looking forward to having robust conversations around the direction of the state, the challenges and needs we face, and how we're going to work on good, strong Democratic solutions to those challenges. And without someone else in the primary, there was no one else to talk to. So I think it's great he's in. You know, one of the challenges we have is that, currently the incumbent governor has a pretty big podium and he can send his message out all the time. Having a primary gives us a chance to talk about what we could be doing instead. I think it sets us all up better for the general.
As the gubernatorial candidates now prepare for a primary, it appears there will also be a Democratic primary for lieutenant governor. Last week, Senate Pro Tem Tim Ash confirmed that if Zuckerman ran for governor, he would seek the position.
I feel ready at this moment to kind of bring my vision statewide, and I don't want to miss the chance to do what I think I would really enjoy doing.
In 2018, Brenda Siegel was among those who lost a five-way primary for governor. In 2020, she will run for lieutenant governor.
You preside over the Senate, but in addition to that, you really can make the seat what you want to make it. And what I want to make it is a way to really build that grassroots movement we need in Vermont to see the changes that we want and need to see.
Like Ash, Siegel says her decision was predicated on Zuckerman's decision to run for governor.
I would not have gone against David in the lieutenant governor seat because he's been doing a great job with really the issues that I have been fighting and caring about for a long time.
Middlebury College Professor Emeritus of Political Science Eric Davis expects a competitive gubernatorial race.
The conventional wisdom would say that Zuckerman is the incumbent lieutenant governor, someone who's run a couple of statewide races before, would have the advantage over Rebecca Holcomb. But she served in a senior position in the administration of both Governor Shumlin and Governor Scott. She has some managerial experience in the education sector. So she'll be a competitive candidate in the primary.
And Davis thinks there are more potential candidates yet to come forward.
Zuckerman's decision to run, creating an open seat for lieutenant governor, is going to have a cascading effect. I expect there'll be a rather large number of candidates in both the Democratic and Republican primaries for lieutenant governor. Most of them, but not all of them, incumbent legislators. That opens up seats in the Vermont Senate and the Vermont House. So the decision of one person, Dave Zuckerman, to run for governor is going to have a ripple effect all the way down the ballot.
Congressman Peter Welch, a Democrat, says while Vermonters have plenty of decisions to make in this presidential election year, he doesn't expect voters to become interested until at least spring.
It's so early in the campaign. I mean, the primary will be in August. So the first order of business for the Democrats is who will they nominate? Rebecca Holcomb, who used to be our Secretary of Education, or David Zuckerman, our Lieutenant Governor. And even before we get through that, most of the focus on Vermont politics is going to be the legislative session. And the campaigns, both campaigns will be working really hard, but I think you won't see a lot of Vermonter interest in them until probably after the legislative session ends.
Vermont's state primary is August 11th, and the filing deadline is May 28th. A national presidential primary is held on town meeting day, March 3rd. No incumbent governor in Vermont has lost a re-election campaign since 1962. Scott has not announced his plans, but is expected to seek a third term. I'm Pat Bratley, WAMC News.
A former Albany police chief says a law that blocks public access to records detailing police misconduct and abuse should be repealed. WAMC's Capital Region Bureau Chief Dave Lucas has that one.
Brendan Cox left the Albany Police Department in 2017 after 22 years on the force. He recently published an op-ed piece in the Times Union calling for a repeal of Section 50A. It was enacted in 1976, intended to prevent defense attorneys from subjecting officers to harassing cross-examinations using information from their personnel file. In practice, it has been used to keep disciplinary records under wraps, even in high-profile cases. Cox spoke with WAMC representing LEAP, the Law Enforcement Action Partnership.
Section 50A is meant to protect information that's in law enforcement police personnel records. And it's meant to basically shield information that's in there from public disclosure on information that would be used to evaluate law enforcement officers, so that information cannot be disclosed to the public. And the way it's currently written, it gets used in a number of different ways, but mainly it's used in when disciplinary action is brought against police officers, that the agency cannot release what exactly occurred, what the outcome of that disciplinary action was, or that disciplinary action actually even took place.
New York, according to Communities United for Police Reform, is one of only two states with a law specifically restricting the public from viewing information on police officers' misconduct and discipline records. Cox says 50A is arguably the country's most secretive law on police misconduct.
As I look over my career and I look at what we were able to do as an entire police force and with a great administration that I had working around me and a great community, what we were able to do to build community trust. When you look at that need to build that trust and the need for transparency, the recognition that 50A really takes away that ability for a chief and for a department to be transparent. Many times you wind up having to ask the public to trust you, and you're not able to really show them why you're asking them to trust.
Cox adds if just one or two officers has done something wrong, it can deeply affect public trust. On the other hand, when police departments and communities develop trust, public safety is enhanced. Cox disputes arguments that repealing 50A would compromise police officers' personal information, like home addresses and phone numbers. He says any such concerns should be addressed in the appeal.
If, in fact, we were able to move forward and repeal the law, to me, the common sense thing would be is to cover those within that repeal. So in the repeal, it should state that those things can't be released. Because I certainly understand those concerns from unions and from officers, from individuals that wouldn't want certain sensitive information released.
The New York City Police Department is not in favor of repealing 50A, but does support release of certain documents in serious misconduct cases. Dave Lucas, WAMC News.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Remember to stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. Thank you for listening. Till next time, I'm Ian Pickus.